Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on La Liga, the closing of the weekend, Sunday, 9 p.m., Real Sociedad against Barcelona. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. I am always glad to talk about La Liga again in a match that definitely, at first, I found it a bit disappointed because of how lopsided it was. Then upon rewatching, I got to a point where I just accepted this Barcelona team are like just really fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's funny because we didn't really saw that coming at the beginning of the season. But now, like, everything is going well and it's full flowing and we really like to watch them. So that's a nice turn of events.
Yes, and it's interesting, right? Because I think there was almost universal criticism of Koeman.
From us as well, From us as well.
Well, yeah, from us too. Like, we didn't like what he was doing. Then eventually he has adapted to this three at the back solution that has worked beautifully for everyone. And it's just one of those things where you start thinking like, man, if they had just figured this out like a few weeks before like those PSG games.
Yeah, that would be better and would have spared them of a pretty bad defeat. Anyways, they played against the Real Sociedad. You go ahead and do that lineup.
Absolutely. So Real Sociedad did, first of all, I have to say that with Real Sociedad, well, they haven't been doing as well as in the first part of the season. So right now, they're still winning the games they're supposed to, but then they're still losing against superior opponents. So they're kind of where they deserve to be, fifth place in the table. This time around, they had a few injuries. Right back, Jose Basaldúa, central defender, Aritz Elustondo, left back, Nacho Monreal. So a lot of the defensive line is kind of gone, which didn't help their case. David Silva was also injured. In the end, Martin Zubimendi and Carlos Fernandez barely made it back from their own injuries, but they got to play. When you first saw the lineup, one thinks, okay, this is going to be classic Real Sociedad 4-3-3. The surprise was when a lot of the time this looked more, especially in defense, it looked more like a 5-4-1. So the keeper, as usual, was Alex Ramiro. Center backs, Igor Zubeldia and Robin Lenormand. And a lot of the time, Martin Zubimendi, who is expected to be the holding midfielder, a lot of the time was just playing in between them as a third center back. Then the other two central midfielders, Ander Guevara, Mikel Merino, you had as the kind of fullback slash wingbacks in this five at the back setup, you had Gorosabel on the right, and then you have Martin Merkelans on the left. Merkelans, who is more of a winger type, and to be honest, it kind of showed because he struggled a lot defending Dest. And then we had the forwards with Cristian Porto on the right, Alexander Isak as the striker, Mikel Oyarzabal on the left wing.
Yeah, and Jose, we did Real Sociedad earlier on the podcast, I think. You did some good podcasts on them when they played against Manchester United. But normally when they play in La Liga, they're a team that likes to have possession and they like to press, right? That's a bit their style.
Absolutely. They are very much a possess and press team normally. I think that game against Real Madrid is a classic example of their 4-3-3 pressing. And it was surprising that they chose this more conservative approach against Barcelona.
Yeah. So speaking of Barcelona, you wouldn't really notice it because of their great form, but they are still missing four players that could have been starters this season with Coutinho, Sergi Roberto, Ansu Fati and Gerard Piqué. And Koeman has been puzzling around, he has been toying around, and now if you followed it a little bit, you know it. He has settled on a shape that is somewhere between 3-4-3, 3-5-2, 3-1-6, give it a name, but it's quite good actually, it works very well. And it has some interesting roles for Frenkie, Busquets and Pedri. In goal, of course, Ter Stegen, then it's three center backs, Langlais on the left, Frenkie in the middle, as a center back, but yeah, he goes into midfield if he wants. And Mingueza on the right. Busquets plays as the lone number six. And then it becomes hard to call it a formation anymore because the midfield roles are a bit unusual. There's Pedri to the left of Busquets. And then in possession, Messi is a bit the right midfielder. So that's where the confusions come in. and keeping the width on the right and the left are Alba on the left and Sergiño Dest on the right. And then the strikers are Dembele and Griezmann. But once again, Dembele really acts as a striker and Griezmann comes into midfield to help with build-up. So there's a lot of freedom for Pedri, for Messi, for Griezmann, for Frenkie. And it can be 3-5-2 in one moment. It can be 3-1-6 one moment after that. And that makes it unpredictable and quite good, actually.
Definitely. Like at this point, we can probably start talking a bit about the game because we get to talk a bit about what Barcelona does in possession. Because like you mentioned, it's really, I'm going to call it nominally like a 3-5-2. But like you mentioned, it's very fluid. The shape changes a lot. Sometimes you're going to see them like a more typical like 3+1 buildup, like with the three center backs and Busquets there. But then they're going to move around. Sometimes you might even find like Frenkie being like more towards one side and then Mingueza being a bit more in the center. Sometimes Frenkie is going to be more holding midfielder than Busquets. Sometimes you had situations where you had like Frenkie and Busquets kind of forming the back three and then Mingueza was acting more like a right back.
That's why it's so flexible, because I talked about the midfield, but at the back, because Frenkie is smart, he knows where to be to make a triangle, he knows where to be to make a dribble for himself. But because of his positioning and the positioning of the other guys, at times they play with two central defenders when they build up, at times it's with three. It's really a fun watch, if you like that.
Yeah, and by the way, this setup also allowed Sergiño Dest to be very aggressive, because I wouldn't even say this guy was a wing back or a full back. He was like
a winger,
full on right winger. Yes.
Yeah, but that's also when he was still at Ajax. I sometimes made the joke that I thought he defended really well for a winger. Like he's a winger profile. He's quick. He's very good technically. But yeah, that's how they do it nowadays. Anyways. Let's talk about the game a bit more. What did you see in the first half hour or so, like that phase when it opened? What did you see?
Yeah, so the first half hour to me was kind of evenly matched, actually. If you see the shot count, for example, it was two shots versus two shots. And the biggest chance of the first half hour was from Real Sociedad, actually.
Yeah, for Isak, you mean that one?
Yes, it was the big chance that Isak had, which is something that he tried to do several times throughout the game. Attract Frenkie to him, then he lays it off to, say, Merkelans on the left wing, then Merkelans make like the pass into space and he tries to run behind Frenkie.
Yeah, but so, this is the trade-off you make, Jose, from my opinion, because this time Isak got the better of Frenkie, he got a shot on goal, but Ter Stegen saved it. That's the trade-off, right? If you play Frenkie in the middle of the defense and he has to defend one versus one, even though he's quick and he's fast and he has a good acceleration, you know he's going to make defensive mistakes in and around the box.
Yeah, and in that particular Isak chance, like Frenkie is fast, so he didn't lose the race against Isak, but then he was about to get the ball. He wanted to pass it to Ter Stegen, but then that kind of failed, and Isak got the ball again. And then Isak did really well like in making the run all the way to the six-yard box, but at the very end, I do feel that the finishing could have been a bit better. And to me, that this was a bit of a theme with Real Sociedad. Like, if you saw several times throughout the game, well, now that we talked about Barcelona's structure in possession, the trade-off of that is that they still look messy in transition. They still look messy, like defending counterattacks and transitions from the opponents. And to me, there were several occasions where Isak, Porto, and Arzabal had plenty of space to run at Barcelona defenders. I think Barcelona defenders generally weren't bad on the one versus ones, except the ones versus Isak. Both Mingueza and Frenkie struggled against Isak, but other than that, Barcelona were good at defending those one versus ones. But I also think that Real Sociedad players the forwards kind of failed a bit in the execution of those final balls.
Yeah, small spoiler alert. This game ended 1-6. I think everyone who listens to this podcast knows that. If you look at that first half hour, it didn't look like that. I thought it was fun. I thought it was interesting. I thought it has a good intensity. I liked some of the tactical stuff we saw, but not a lot of chances.
Yeah, not a lot of chances. Both teams, Barcelona on their side, they were pressing. They're 3-4-3 Mm-hmm. Now with under Koeman, they can finally press, like they finally look like a bit of a coherent defensive block. The thing that called my attention, like I won't go into too much details of the pressing, so the only thing I'll say is that what calls my attention is these days just how much defensive work Griezmann is putting in, because it's not just the pressing out of like the superstars in the world of football. Griezmann is probably the one who's best defensively.
Yeah.
He reads passes well. He intercepts well, and he puts in the shift, because he was doing well picking up second balls. He was doing well pressing. And then when the team had to retreat like to a deeper block, he was also very intense about tracking back.
Yeah, a small sidewalk, because we painted the picture of the first half hour tactically. I think there were not a lot of chances. Is this the best role for Griezmann so far since he arrived at Barcelona? Because he had to play left winger, he had to play striker, he had to play second striker. But is this kind of role really servicing the other players around him and picking up his goals as well? Is this his best role so far at Barcelona?
I like this one in particular because I think Koeman, Griezmann and Messi have kind of figured out how to fit each other and how to... This is a very important thing. Like I think with the current setup, Koeman has figured out certain player societies pretty well. Now, like Busquets and Frenkie are not stepping on each other's zones. Messi and Griezmann are not stepping on each other's zones. Because why were coaches playing Griezmann on the left wing? Because they wanted Griezmann on the left so that he wouldn't step over Messi's zones on the right. Mm-hmm. That didn't end up working. And right now, Koeman and company are doing a different solution, which is play Messi like more in a mid, almost in a midfielder role a lot of the time, mm-hmm. and then let Griezmann play up further ahead, like still on the right, but basically as a kind of second striker who occasionally drops deep. And that is actually working pretty well. And we are having situations where because Messi is deeper and Griezmann is further up ahead, they're not stepping into each other's territory.
I think that's a good summary. Now, we talked about Sociedad being a pressing and possession team. We didn't see that here. Why do you think they changed their approach? And if anything, did it work?
I think neither you nor I were big fans of the approach that Real Sociedad took, because these are guys that, for example, a few weeks ago saw, okay, we're playing against Kroos, Modric, and Isco, and we're going to go like full suicide press against these guys. And they did it pretty well. It worked for them. This time, for the case of Barcelona, they were more scared about doing that. So they didn't press aggressively. This is the most passive Real Sociedad that I remember under Alguacil. And I think Alguacil had, I don't know if I agree with them, but I understand the reasons why. And I think two main reasons. Number one, it's not the same to press Real Madrid with Thibaut Courtois as the keeper than pressing Barcelona with Ter Stegen as the keeper, a guy who can almost pass the ball under pressure as well as many outfield players. That makes a big difference. And the other thing is that Real Madrid didn't have a guy like Dembele making really dangerous runs into space. So I think because of all that, Alguacil did that specific arrangement of one, set the defensive line lower, also, deeper block because they needed to compress space and prevent Pedri, Messi, Griezmann from receiving in between the lines. So they had to push their midfield line lower too. And then Alguacil also did the specific adjustment of, we're going to have Martin Zubimendi make this into a line of five and track Dembele aggressively throughout the game. And we saw him do this very aggressively throughout the first 35 minutes. And funnily enough, the one time where he didn't do it, the one time where he kind of forgot of Dembele and started keeping track of Messi, that's when the goal came in. So,
yes, that came after 37 minutes. I did think it was deserved at this point. I did think Barcelona had good territorial dominance, but they hadn't created a lot of stuff for themselves. And this was actually a great goal. And you described it earlier as well, tactical mechanisms of how it came to play. And I think Dembele missed it and Griezmann got the tap in, right? That was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they were in front and they would go on to score a lot of more goals. But I think with the benefit of hindsight, their second goal, which they scored 6 minutes later, shortly before halftime, the second goal of Barcelona really shows the qualities and the power of this system and how it works. Because 2 minutes before halftime, they were building up Sociedad once again in a low block. And three defenders at the back with Frenkie in possession, Busquets just in front, and basically six players up front. So 3-1-6, Alba and Dest on the right and left stretching the field, then Dembele all the way at the striker stretching the field, and then Messi, Pedri and Griezmann between the lines. And then it was very simple. Frenkie to Busquets. Busquets one touch, as he does so well, finds Messi between the lines, and then everyone starts going deep. Then everyone starts to make a run. He finds Dest. Messi finds Dest with a pass, and Dest scores it. And I think if you watch it back, that's very clear how this system can function, even against a 5-4-1 low block.
Yes, and I think the way I like to summarize this game is just quoting that Jose Mourinho football heritage. That Busquets to Messi pass is football heritage.
But you do it wrong, because Jose Mourinho never pronounces the H. He says football heritage.
Heritage, yes.
Yes, football heritage, but, indeed, correct.
Absolutely, that pass is football heritage, and now I pronounced it correctly. And I love it, because he, like, that one in the second goal is just beautiful, because it's just the first touch pass that goes through the line, and then and in the end, everything breaks down, because that's what breaks down everything. Once Messi gets the ball there, Real Sociedad's defensive line kind of loses it, and all of them are focusing on Messi and the ball. And then for example, Merkelans on the left side, as it happened in the, and I think something similar happened in another one of the goals, he kind of forgets that Dest exists because he's focusing on Messi. And then, and at that point, Dest is making the run behind him and gets the goal. Dest scored a lot with Ajax too, right?
For a fullback, he had a lot of goal and assist contributions. And also, yeah, let's not talk about Ajax a lot, but he was good there. And really, as I said earlier, almost as a winger on the right. So 0-2 at halftime. I do think Sociedad were not the better team in the first half, but 0-2 was a bit harsh if you look at the chances, even though the football heritage goal was very nice. Any halftime adjustments, Jose?
I was a bit surprised to not see major halftime adjustments, because it already looked like they were starting to be overcome by Barcelona. So one would have expected a bit more of an adjustment. But there was still a bit of a tactical adjustment. And I don't think it was good, now that I think about it. What happened is that Real Sociedad still kept the line of five, and they were still doing kind of a 5-4-1. But then they decided to press a bit more aggressively than they did in the first half. You would have thought that that's a good thing. But one, especially with five at the back, it was really hard for them to press Barcelona, because Barcelona had the numerical superiority in the buildup. They always had more players. And they were so fluid about their movements that it really, like, the Real Sociedad press did really nothing to them anyways. But because they were also pressing a bit more aggressively, then they were less compact. At least in the first half, yes, Real Sociedad defended deeper, but they had some compactness that prevented Pedri and Griezmann from having more impact in between lines. But in the second half, it almost felt like Real Sociedad were kind of in one of those situations where they still wanted to defend a bit deep, but press a bit more, but like they wanted to do something in between, and ended up doing neither of those two things well.
That's always a pity if that happens. If you look at, they tried to press in certain moments, and then you saw it in the first half as well, but in the second half a bit more regular, then it becomes clear how hard Barcelona's build-up is still to press. And not because of perfect positioning or perfect positional play from the back and making triangles all the time, but Ter Stegen is so much quality. Frenkie, Busquets, and I like Mingueza. He's not of the quality of Frenkie and Busquets when building up, but he's certainly not bad. And I think Langlais, of course, can also contribute. And then, yeah, it just becomes a more fun game for me, Jose, because more pressing. You have to see more of Frenkie, more of Busquets. And there's two things I want to talk with you about that. One, you made a nice comparison between Frenkie and Busquets and two certain managers at the moment at the top European level. Can you go into that a little bit?
Oh, well, that was not even my comparison. That is a comparison made by a Barcelona account that I respect a lot, Captain Guardiola, who was basically saying that making an analogy of like the current interplay between Busquets and Frenkie reminded him a lot of the interplay in Cruyff's Barcelona of Koeman himself and Guardiola as a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, and I think I'm too young to have seen those matches, obviously, but I think with Cruyff, it was more 3-4-3 diamond, and this is more like a 3-1-5-1 or whatever, but the key component is that there's a a blonde Dutch guy at the back and a balding Spanish midfielder just in front, and they're both great, great, great players.
Absolutely. And again, it's nice that they finally...
I hope Busquets doesn't listen to this because he's not really balding, not like Guardiola was. But anyway,
you definitely want to not.
Things again.
It's a bit similar to like the Messi-Griezmann issue in that it's nice to see that now Busquets and Frenkie have figured out a way to not step on each other's zones. Right now, Barcelona's buildup is very much controlled by both of them. And that's like, it's basically they figured out a way to play together.
Yeah. And I thought I talked a little bit about Koeman puzzling all the time and changing it up. And if you look at Frenkie de Jong's season, that really sums up the puzzle because he started in a double pivot with Busquets, if you remember, and then 4-2-3-1. Then they played a 4-3-3, wherein he was more a box to box midfield and even tried to score goals. And now in this 3-1-5-1, 3-1-4-2 formation, whatever you like to call it, he's the central defender making plays from the back. So that really goes to show you how much Koeman has tried and tried, and respect to him because, as I said earlier, also we were a bit pessimistic, but he has now definitely figured it out. Yeah. So we said earlier, Real Sociedad really lost some compactness in the, compared to the first half, and now Barcelona had a lot more space in between the lines. That led to a lot of chances and a lot of goals. We're not going to cover them all individually, I think. But in the 56th minute, we had the 4-0. And that was, again, football heritage.
That pass I loved because it's one of those situations where you know that the players have such telepathic understanding that they make moves before the opposition defense can figure it out. Because what happened there is that Busquets has the ball. Messi moves in a bit deeper to receive what was supposed to be like a your typical like Busquets to Messi ground pass. And he pulled Zubimendi to him. But in that instant, like Busquets think, oh, instead of doing the ground pass, I'm just going to send it over like over the top. Mm-hmm. And then Messi and Busquets kind of understood that together. And if you freeze the video at the right moment, you can see this situation where like all of the Real Sociedad defenders are thinking, are expecting the ground pass, but Messi's already making the run forward because he already understood, okay, this guy is going to send it over the top. They figured that out before the Real Sociedad defend like a half second earlier. And that was enough, of course, for Messi to get the ball and score.
Yeah, and I think, Jose, if we're honest, we described all of the tactical stuff why Barcelona now had more space. It at this point in time, it's 4-0 up for Barcelona. I think we're kind of done with the podcast because after the 4-0, it was basically the same game, even though we did get to see some fantastic goals, also of Baratenece, of...
Barrenechea.
Barrenechea, thanks, Jose. Barrenechea for Sociedad, but yeah, is there a lot to talk about tactically?
From Real Sociedad perspective, of course, at this point, even if you make tactical changes, what's the point? The game is basically dead. They still maintain for like 10 minutes after that fourth goal, they still maintain kind of the three at the back. Gorosabel was replaced by Barrenechea. Barrenechea is more of a winger, but this time he was playing wing back. Jan Usai came in for Porto as right winger. Eventually, like around the 70th minute, they did away completely with the with the back five, and they had Carlos Fernandez, a striker, come in for Zubimendi, a holding midfielder. So that's when they did away with the back five, and they switched over to 4-4-2 with Isak and Fernandez at the front, which I actually like. I think if Real Sociedad want to play counterattack, that 4-4-2 might be a better alternative than the 5-4-1 thing they did throughout most of the game. I actually would like to see more of that later, but it does make me wonder a bit. Like, it's nice that they are doing these kinds of experiments, but was playing against Barcelona the right moment to play around with your formation? Yeah. I am not sure.
Probably not. I'm sorry that I messed up the chronologically, because I talked about that goal from Real Sociedad already before you said he was subbed on. But yeah, great goal. The fifth goal for Barcelona was also football editage, because Dembele showed he was super two-footed in that moment, makes a dribble, goes right, goes left, and then he finishes with his left. And actually, Jose, I'd like to make this point. Dembele gets a lot of flack for not being a good finisher because he messes up in high-profile games. But if you look at it, at his expected goals, he's actually not doing very well or not very bad, just a regular finisher. So that's, yeah, puzzling to me. Like, he messes up against Liverpool in the last minute. Remember that? And he messed up last week against PSG. So people think he's a bad finisher, but I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I guess for me, as a Real Madrid fan, my standards are low because I watch Vinicius on a weekly basis. So of course, I see Dembélé finishing and I'm like, yeah, that's okay. He's not Homing Son or Messi, but he's still like an average finisher for forwards. That's pretty good. And he's been so... Actually, before, a good way to finish off our analysis would be to just ask you, how do you like him right now in the striker role?
I'll be honest, I get why Koeman, giving the current squad and the current tactical puzzle we discussed earlier, needs one guy to go deep in behind. I don't like Dembele in that role, and I think Ansu Fati will replace him as soon as he is fit.
I would agree with that statement. I like this a lot from a player development perspective, because Dembele, that was kind of Dembele's deficit. He has always been a very ball to the feet kind of forward, a guy who wanted to get the ball out wide on the right wing, for example, and then try to cut inside and do his thing or dribble past someone. But it was always very ball to the feet. And different coaches, especially Valverde, tried doing this for a while, tried to make him more aggressive going into space, but in the end, things didn't quite work out. He got injured a lot, so he didn't have continuity. Now he's having another run of games where Koeman has decided to play him as a striker, and I also don't think it works to his strengths, as in I don't think the player has that chip of like being very aggressive without the ball, but I think he's getting better at it. Like, I think he's starting to see these situations a bit more frequently. One thing that I liked a lot, for example, in this game was that at first he was just in the center and then Zubimendi kept tracking him. But why did Zubimendi stop tracking him during the second half? Because he started moving to other places. He started showing up on the wing. He started making runs behind, like in the channel between wing back and center back. And at that point, Zubimendi could not track him because he was just too mobile. So those were good adjustments. And I think he's getting a bit better at reading these situations without the ball. So I also agree that Ansu Fati will be a better fit in the current scheme and that he's a better player at reading these kinds of situations. But at least Dembele is evolving a bit in this regard.
Sure. And I will close the match analysis by saying that if you did not watch this game or highlights, you should definitely go back and watch the sixth goal of Barcelona, because that was fantastic. Also a big role for Riqui Puig, who had came on, the small, fantastically technical midfielder, and Messi scored Barcelona's sixth goal. And while you're at it, go back and watch the second goal scored by Dest, because that really goes to show you the strength of this Barcelona formation when they have the ball. Let's go into takeaways, Jose. For me, don't be scared, but I really, really, really like watching this Barcelona team from a fun point of view. And that's really a huge leap they made. And I like it a lot because, like, in contrast to really positional play teams like Manchester City, for example, there is a relatively unstructured style of getting the ball forward. It's relying on the talent of Frenkie and Busquets. And then Pedri and Messi can come into the ball if they want. They can play a bit more higher up the field if they want to. And when it works, it's crazy good to see. And it feels to me, because that's what I like, it feels instinctively more fun than the more like machine-like play of Man City this season. And before I end this quite long monologue, I'd like to say that we didn't really cover Pedri, but what he does as an 18-year-old in this formation and style and what he's asked to do and how he does it, it blows my mind what he can do, Pedri. So that we didn't mention him and that he's a fully functioning cog in this machine, that's really a testament to his talent. And I really, really like watching him.
Yeah, with Pedri, it's fun because normally, how do I put it? I think one almost expects like an 18-year-old to be thinking more about himself and about, say, how to set himself up for chances and that kind of thing, that rather than just fully playing for the team. And Pedri kind of always plays around other players. He plays with other players. He does kind of what's best for the team and what the play requires. Like, it's just really good interpretation for an 18-year-old, and that is insane. Then the one thing I will say about this Barcelona side is that even though they are ridiculously fun to watch right now on the offense, I do wonder, the one thing where I still don't know if it will go well against high, like the highest caliber opponents, is defense. For example, Frenkie and Mingueza were suffering a bit against Isak today. And then one thinks, imagine if this were like a Champions League game against Haaland or someone like that. It's
a Champions League game against Mbappe, for example.
Exactly. So there's the suffering, because Frenkie, of course, is really good in this role in build-up. But to me, in defense, he still looks a bit out of his depth.
Not a bit. And it's funny to me because I get to talk about Ajax all the time, but this was even true in the Eredivisie, when Frenkie played as a center back in the Dutch league. He lost his striker. Sometimes he made sloppy mistakes. He steps out if he has to stay centrally, stuff like that. So it's not new. It's just, yeah, he's a midfielder, played a center back, and that shines through when the opponent attacks. That's not that weird.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jose, I just wanted to compliment you again that's basically the good tactical summary of this formation. It works very well against a team like Sociedad, but if you do this against a Benzema, Vinicius, and for example, a fit Rodrigo or fit Hazard, who's really good, then I have questions. I really have questions. So it's a good summary from you.
Yeah, and thanks. And that's Real Madrid, who honestly are not, let's just say that apart from Benzema, I wouldn't call the wingers right now world class. If they have to face, like right now, world class attackers, I am not sure about this Barcelona. And again, this is something that we'll have to see when it happens. We'll have to see what happens when, say, they face Atletico and they have to deal with Marcos Llorente running in behind these guys.
Sure. And Suarez.
Yeah. And then on the side of Real Sociedad, so the one thing I will say is, this is one of these matches where they lost because, A, I'm not sure the game plan itself was the best fit, and B, because they executed that game plan a bit poorly. So both planning and execution felt like they failed a bit. Personally, it felt like they were betraying their philosophy a bit by going with this more passive 5-4-1 setup. I understand the reasons this approach was chosen, but I'm not sure. Maybe it would have been better to just, sure, if you pressed high, Barcelona would have scored 3 goals against you. Very likely. This Barcelona side are really, really, really good. So that could happen. But maybe they were going to have a bit more control than what they had in this game. Maybe they could have gotten more than 1 goal scored if they had been a bit more aggressive in their approach, which is interesting because in the Manchester United game, I thought, oof, maybe they were too aggressive here. And now against Barcelona, I felt like they overcorrected and they were too passive. So it's just hard to find the middle ground.
Yeah, that's true. We are now going into international games. The difference between Atletico and Barcelona is now, let me look it up. I thought it was four points.
It's 4 points.
4 points with 10 games. So everything still to play for. Great last few months of La Liga coming up. And let's hope for you that Real Madrid can also play a part in that. Thanks, Jose. I really like this podcast. I really like this Barcelona to watch. I'm not sure what you said earlier about the sustainability of this formation, but compliment to Koeman that he figured it out and they are playing now the way they are playing.
Yeah, I think despite the deficits, this is a team that nobody can deny is fun to watch. Barcelona fans seem to be happier, understandably. And it, at the very least, even if it has deficits, it feels like this is something that you can build on. This is already structures and player partnerships that you can build up for next seasons. So even if Barcelona doesn't manage to win any titles this season, if they can keep going through the process like this, they will have something to build on for next seasons. And frankly, getting that result out of this season that looked like it was going to be super chaotic, what happened with Messi and everything, honestly, that's a pretty good result. Just getting that base of young players to build on for the future.
Thanks so much, Jose. If you liked this podcast, leave a review in iTunes. And if you like our website, you can visit betweentheposts.net because the wonderfully talented Emmanuel made a match report on this game. We will be back next week. Thanks so much for listening, Jose. No, we will not be back next week because there's international games and we never do international games. So we will be back 3rd of April with Leipzig against Bayern. Thanks so much, Jose, and we will be back.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks everyone for listening.